Welcome to the Crackin' Backs podcast. This podcast is about two experienced sports chiropractors seeking knowledge from some of the best resources in the world of health. From our perspective, health is more than just cracking backs, but a deep dive into philosophies on physical, mental, and nutritional well-being. Today, we welcome Ted Stern. Ted started his fitness journey at the age of 18, but would not take it seriously for many years later. After going through hard times and an unstable home life, Ted enrolled in the Sheriff Department and after 11 years of service felt a new calling to help and empower first responders to be a better version of themselves. What does this mean? Well, we are about to find out on this episode of Crackin' Backs with Ted Stern.
All right, welcome, Ted. We're totally happy to have you on, especially with somebody with a movie just coming out called Super Mario. I think that's I think we're excited to have you on there. And the only reason I brought that because off air we were talking about that, and you've been identified with because that incredible stash you have.
Yeah, well, thanks. Unfortunately, I'm not starring in the Super Mario movie. I absolutely would. So if anyone's listening that's got some connections, you know.
On a serious note though, after when I kind of did some research and some of the friends you have some incredible people on your staff, and your story isn't fantastic. And I got really inspired. I was listening to David Goggins' new book called Never Finished. And I don't know if you've listened to it or the audience has listened to it, but it's fantastic. But he talks about finding power out of adversity. And before we go into your current work, which I think is why you're so good at what you do, I want to talk about a post you recently did where you did a quote that I actually personally found inspiring, where you said the same boiling water that softens the potato hardens the egg. How did you identify with
this? Yeah, that's quote? My favorite quote. And I think it's an empowering one because, especially nowadays, there's a lot of victim mindsets that are perpetuated that, oh, I'm the way I am and I have to be the way I am because of X, Y, Z, right? And it's kind of removing power and responsibility from people. But the fact is there's just so many countless examples of people who come out stronger and come out better and become successful due to the obstacle, due to the challenges and struggles they've endured. And I think a lot of my success has come from struggles I've had. And I think the post you're talking about, I'm referencing, I kind of had an abusive, well, I definitely had an abusive alcoholic drug addict mom, not the most ideal childhood. And I'm not going to try to claim I had the worst childhood or that I'm some kind of a victim or you should feel sorry for me. But the point of the post was that, I use that to fuel my desire to succeed. And you mentioned David Goggins and he talks about that a lot, right? He says things like someone calls you fat. Maybe use that to motivate you to improve. Someone calls you dumb, right? What do you do with that? It's what you do with that thing and what do you turn it into that matters most, right? I think that's also a pretty prevalent theme in Stoicism, which I'm a big fan of as well. So yeah, I guess just to kind of wrap that up, the idea is that we all have challenges, struggles, and what we ought to do is frame our perspective around it, if we can, in terms of, hey, is this a lesson I can learn from? Is this an event that I can improve from rather than this is the thing that's breaking me down? This is the thing that's holding me back. This is why I can't do X, Y, Z, right? So just like the boiling water if you're a potato, it's going to make you soft and you'll crumble. And if you're the egg, it'll harden you up. So let's be the egg, I guess. Does that make sense?
Ted, I love that kind of conversation because so many people feel victimized and, are out of their control. And Tony Robbins tells a really cool story about two brothers, one who is a career criminal, the other was a very successful orthopedic surgeon. And they asked the career criminal brother, what happened that shaped you to be this career criminal? And he says, well, my dad was a drug addict and he was in jail, in and out of jail, had a rap sheet as long as his arm and all that. Okay, that was your example of life. And they asked the brother and the successful orthopedic surgeon, and they asked him, and he says, and they go, what made you so opposite of your brother and so successful? And he goes, well, I did not want to be like my dad.
Hmm.
That's simple. You know, I chose a different path because that one was too painful for me. So I really appreciate hearing. So if you're now, I know, you know, we usually hear about issues between father and son, but you got shaped by circumstances with your mom. Do you mind sharing some of the things that were pivotal to your change and what happened?
Yeah. And similar to your example there, I looked at my mom and said, I don't ever want to be like that. You know, and where do you draw inspiration from? And it sounds like in that Tony Robbins example or the brothers, one of the career criminal, his life was essentially inspired by a bad example. So in the wrong way, right? So how do you draw your inspiration? So for me, I want to be successful, and it's a proof to myself about who I am. Right. I think that's an important conversation is like, who are you? Ask yourself that question. Who are you? Are you a victim? Are you the type of person who's just going to quit and crumble? And when bad things happen, woe is me. I'm a victim. I just hate to think of myself that way. It's just like, it's an awful feeling to think of yourself that way. So why be that way? I mean, and so, yeah, I guess to get into specifics, you know, I liked. You hear stories, right, where people get beat up, so therefore they get stronger and they learn how to fight, right? And a couple of instances happened like that when I was younger, you know, and also from my mom, she would, there's times where she'd slap me around too. And, you know, I just wanted to be a tough person. So what a lot of circumstances did for me that were tough is it really drove my desire to be like bulletproof, not to sound like a total D-bag right now, but I want to strive for that. Not saying I am, not saying I'm Mr. Joe Cool, Mr. Tough, and I'm definitely not David Goggins, but I like to think of myself as like, how can I be bulletproof? How can I make myself more of the type where if something bad happens, I only get better? You know, and I will show you. And I think that's something we can all look back on with pride if we can. And aren't those the most inspirational stories when you hear from so-and-so who went through all these tough things and they came out better? So I think the big takeaway is that there isn't any factors that necessitate you must become whatever. Just like with those brothers, does having a drug addict parent or an abusive role model or bad friends, does that necessitate that you must become whatever? No, because for any point someone can make to say, well, it is because of these circumstances I'm the way I am, or this example I was brought up with, or these friends I, you know, was, I guess, inspired from in poor ways, it's got to be a false statement, because for any example you can point to, there's also many examples of people who have succeeded, have done very well with the same challenges. You're injured, you can't work out. Look at this person who's even worse off, and they've done great. You know, you've had this terrible abusive relationship. Well, look at this person who came out of that and was successful. So yeah, I love that. I love getting inspired by other success stories. And it's a big theme that drives me. I don't know if I answered your question.
Ted. No, that's great. Ted, what the audience doesn't know is that before you got into fitness, you were in law enforcement. And this is quite a journey from, you know, a childhood that was very challenging, and it could have easily chased you down the opposite path. So what sparked your interest in law enforcement
and issues? So it was kind of an accumulation. In fact, cops showed up at my mom's house several times growing up. So they always provided a source of comfort, you know, and I wish I knew who the deputies were. I wish I could talk to them and say, thank you. Like these minor things they did, they probably thought, hey, I'm just consoling a little boy who's upset. And wow. Some of them took a role model position. Were absolutely life-changing. And, I had different career ideas growing up, and even up until college, I wanted to be a lawyer, changed my mind there. But I remember, you know, seeing cops in action and watching cops on TV and going, that looks like fun. That looks cool. And my dad would go, are you insane? That looks crazy. Like, no, why would you do that? You know, we're watching a clip of like some squirrely drug addict fighting the cops and, you know, they're taking him down. I'm like, I want to do that. And he's like, you want to do that? I'm like, yeah. So yeah, just, I always respected cops, I think, from a young age because of how, you know, their positive impact they had on me during tough times. And then watching them in action, it just looked like an exciting career, like, and just an opportunity to, here's what I love. The guy who can go into a room when there's chaos and people are upset and they don't know how to solve problems. And this person walks in like a badass and just handles it. Nope. You do this. You do this. You sit down. Here's what we're going to do. Mm. That to me is like so tough and so cool. So I'm like, I always thought I want to be that person. That's being a hero. That's, you know, that's being the badass, is just being calm, cool, and collected and handling business when everyone else is freaking out. So that's kind of what shaped my desire to be a cop.
Fantastic. Now you get into fitness. It becomes your passion. I believe there's statistics out there about officers having a shorter life expectancy than the general public. Is that a truth?
Oh yeah. And if you look up, you know, the data, the statistics, first responders in general tend to be the most obese of professions. Yeah. Which really? Is sad. It's, you know, top three for sure. And they ought to be some of the fittest, right? First responders ought to be some of the fittest amongst professions. And of course, there's a lot of factors that make it a real challenge to be fit in the job. As much incentive as there is or ought to be fit as a first responder, especially a cop, especially a firefighter. But there's a lot of challenges, right? So yeah, isn't there that stereotype of the fat donut eating cop? And unfortunately, you see it a lot. Not to badmouth people who are overweight, of course. I mean, the vast majority of my clients and people who enter the Fit Responder program are overweight, but it's going to take away from the quality of life. It's going to take away from your enjoyment of life on a personal level. It is going to cut that, you know, if you look at the factors that lead to preventable death and the leading causes of death in America, it's factors related to obesity. And you take that on top of how difficult the career is, the stress, how sedentary it is, the gear that you wear on your body, the injuries people accumulate, PTSD, and then people turn to poor coping mechanisms, right? And all of these factors swirling around, especially in a climate nowadays where it's very tough to be a cop with the media scrutiny and all that. Cops aren't taking care of themselves well. I mean, first responders are not taking care of themselves well. They tend to take care of everyone else. You know, they're juggling the family life, the victims and people they deal with and the partners at work, and they put their own fitness, health, and body on the back burner. So yeah, that statistic is very true. It's very, unfortunately cliche, the idea of a cop retiring and dying 2 years later, you know, 56, 57 years old. You see it all too often. So that is a huge part of what I'm working on changing.
So with that, I mean, I think it's crazy that they have to take a certain fitness test before they even become an officer or a first responder. Isn't that right? They have to complete a certain set of fitness.
Yeah. I mean, the standards can vary quite a bit across the country, I've found. In the vast majority of cases, you have to pass some kind of a basic fitness test, which has gotten easier and easier and easier over the years. And a lot of times they just give people a pass in many examples I've seen. And then the academy, there are some physical standards in most academies. Again, it ranges. Some are incredibly easy. Some are a little bit tougher depending on the agency standards. There's so many examples of cops passing academies who are still way out of shape. But often I hear, you know, when I talk to people in our program, you know, the best shape I was ever in was in the academy or just after the academy. And then it's downhill from there. Because unfortunately, the overwhelming majorities of agencies don't have ongoing standards. They don't have standards they uphold people to meet, even though there are things you see in the military, especially people have to require, or people are required to pass certain standards, oftentimes both like body metrics and performance testing. But you just don't see that very often in law enforcement and fire.
You know, what's fascinating though, is, I mean, I over my tenure as a chiropractor, and certainly involved in sports injuries, I was called into the regional office of the FBI, to another police department, and a fire chief asked me because he
has a wild life.
They were desperate on getting their staff back in shape, and because they've gotten so far. But here's the crazy thing that I didn't realize. Let's say you're going to a fire, and you have, and actually this was a situation they very sincerely were desperate about, and that was they had a 5'3" female that was 250 pounds who wasn't like that when she got into the academy, and now you're depending on that person to back you up.
Yeah,
they can't. You know, I don't understand. There's such liability there.
Huge.
So, yeah. So, you know, I think I read something that a comment that is such a potent wake-up call that I absolutely love. And I wanted to bring this out right from the start. And that was, it's worth repeating. First responders who neglect their fitness, health, and body also neglect their partners, family, and those they serve. Now tell us how you really feel.
Yeah. And you know what? Those posts often sting a little bit. I'll get some negative feedback. I'll get some people who think I'm making fun, whatever. But the truth is, well, first of all, that is true. And secondly, I do get a lot of people reach out to me and go, Ted, you know, that was a wake up call. That kind of hit me in the gut and I'm changing now. So those types of words do inspire people to change. But it's absolutely true. And I made a post recently where I said the level of dedication you have to your fitness also speaks to your level of dedication to bring you and your partners home safe. And it's another way to think about it. And I used an example, like if you have an airline pilot who's pretty good in general, but let's say they have no skills in terms of an emergency landing. They refuse to learn it. They refuse to put that in their skill set. Can they be a good pilot most of the time? For sure. But what if some crap hits the fan? Are they truly dedicated to safety? Would you say that pilot is dedicated to bringing their passengers home safe? I don't know if you could. You could say, well, you're generally good, but why aren't you fixing this area? Because what if something comes up where you need to use this skill? And I don't see fitness as any different, right? I mean, it's something that takes time. It takes effort. It, you know, just like training for a pilot might take some time and effort. And here's the sad part, guys. We don't hear a lot of stories from cops where they admit, hey, I had this foot pursuit and I failed, or this fight and I failed, or, you know, I tripped and fell and it was embarrassing and I couldn't. This stuff, the failures on the job with both firefighters and cops are very prevalent, but they don't make the news. It's not necessarily an exciting story. And these people don't want to really share that publicly. Hey, I want to tell you about this embarrassing event where, you know, my fitness, I totally failed due to my lack of fitness. I hear that stuff all the time because I connect with people who are trying to and want to improve their fitness as first responders. So they'll tell me in private conversations about how they failed on the job and how guilty they feel about failing in certain examples with victims and partners and how embarrassing it is. And that's the wake up call. Now they realize they need to change, because the unfortunate part in some way is that these emergency events where your fitness may be called upon are more rare than sitting on your butt and writing a report and walking to and from the door of a house, which is what 99% of a first responder's job is. It's not doing much. Okay. Like they're mostly sedentary. So because these emergency events or these incidents where fitness is needed, since those are so rare, I think too many are just banking on, well, hopefully it doesn't happen to me, or I'll make it. Mm. They have this false sense of confidence. I'll make it. My adrenaline will push me through. I've heard dumb statements like that. But yeah, I don't want this to happen. You know, I don't want this to happen. I don't want first responders to be failing in and out of the job in their life because of their lack of fitness. unfortunately, too often it takes a real wake up call where they have a heart attack, they have a stroke, maybe less minor or less, less major, more minor, where a doctor prescribes them pills for blood pressure, cholesterol, whatever. But, I don't exactly remember your original question, but I hope I answered that.
No, you're sharing a lot of good stuff. Go ahead.
And Ted, you can't say, I don't know what I'm talking about. You've come from, your words should go to everybody, not just first responders and cops. However, you're coming from an abusive situation. People could say, oh, you have PTSD. You come from a cop. Oh, you could say, you have PTSD. Now you're a trainer and you've transformed your own body. You're speaking from experience, not from a book. And we always say that a healthy body gives a healthy mind and vice versa. So I think it's, I'm sitting here listening to you two talking. It blows me away that these statistics, that these cops, which you think are have to chase down the bad guy, fight the bad guy, or have to run up the ladder and save the little damsel in distress and all that kind of stuff, that they're that unhealthy. And then they wonder why their brain is shot, and they wonder why they can't cope, and they wonder why they can't sleep. They wonder why they can't be a good partner. And as simple as the answer is, why do you think that? It's a simple answer of taking, putting themselves first and taking care of their vessels so they can have a healthy mind. Where do you think that disconnect?
Yeah, Terry, that's a great point to make. And that I share a lot of before and after photos of clients. They lose a lot of fat and that catches eyeballs. But honestly, the best transformations comes from their quality of life and their mindset and the things you just spoke of. Like when you get fit and healthier, you tend to feel better, think more clearly. You're more motivated, more productive, on top of your game. They tell me things like, I got the promotion. I even got the girl where I'm going on dates again, whatever. Right. So like, as you just said, the psychological is closely tied to the physiological. They take care of each other. Right. And, but where does that disconnect come from? on the one hand, I think it's a lot like if you guys have heard the analogy of you put a frog in water and then you start to heat it up and it won't jump out if you slowly bring it to a boil. It doesn't realize the damage getting done if it's incremental. And I think that's a lot with first responders is they just keep kicking the can down the road. I'm getting a little out of shape. Maybe I'll put in a half-assed attempt to get fit. And that was hard. And I'm busy and I have kids and I have the work and I'm stressed out and it just kind of just keeps going. And these guys I talk to are 270 plus pounds of fat and they go, how the hell did I get here? Like, I don't even know how I got here. This is just, it's just crazy to me, even in their own subjective experience. And I think a lot of it is false confidence too. You're asking about the disconnect, right? I think a lot of them feel they're more capable than they actually are. I hear that a lot. This one drives me nuts. I'm still strong though. Brother, we just talked about how you have high blood pressure, high cholesterol. You can't go up a flight of stairs without huffing and puffing. Your face gets red like a cherry tomato when you tie your shoes. You're still strong, though? Stop, dude. I hear this so much. I still got it. Adrenaline. So, first responders who are listening, go test yourself. Do something simple. Like, run 100 yards. Do 10 burpees, shadow box for a minute. That'll take you 3 minutes. See how you do. If you can barely lift your arms to throw a punch, maybe you got a problem. But yeah, the disconnect, I'd say, to wrap that up is it's an incremental thing. And they kind of like just keep kicking the can down the road. They don't realize how serious it is until big problems happen. And then a lot of them just keep justifying it with silly excuses and also have a lot of false confidence.
Right there, justification. I think that's what's happening both in society and in humans. People, we can justify everything and make excuses. I hate excuses. And, even an article in USA Today in 2022, they're now justifying obesity, saying, obesity was long considered a personal failing. But science shows it's not. What science? So you put up this article even on your website. And so what science are they talking about? And they're trying to pull something from all these small, Pacoima State, all these little small places to justify that, oh, people's feelings, but people don't realize their feelings are tied to their fitness. So it doesn't make sense. What's your opinion?
I can't stand it. There's this trend that we see in a lot of different areas nowadays, this woke culture where nothing is your fault. You had to be the way you are because of X, Y, Z. And what it does is it really makes it extremely difficult to change, because if you come from the mindset of, well, I have to be the way I am due to genetics, due to whatever, that necessitates that you don't have control to change, right? Because if you did, and if you actually said, well, no, I could become completely different, I could become a completely different person, well, then that proves that, of course, genetics don't doom you to be the person you currently are, right? And like, I made a post recently where I put a lot of before and after photos, and I put same genetics in both pictures, right? Like, they still have the same genes, but they said, I'm going to decide to change. One of my great friends is a client. He was originally a client of mine, cop with two kids. He weighed over 300 pounds. And then flash forward 2 years later, he stepped on a bodybuilding stage with me. You know, he lost over 100 pounds. He's jacked. It looks great. He comes from, a genetic line where most of his family members are obese. What happened to him though? Well, he took action. He took massive action and he made a commitment to himself. So yeah, there's no doubt that genetic variables are very real, that I think people have very real challenges. I think some people make slower progress than others. Some people have a more difficult time adopting some practices than others, no doubt. But I refuse to accept the fact that, like, you can't change, you're powerless. There's, you can't become the person you want to become due to how your parents were or whatever. And first of all, none of our ancestors were obese. So our 300 years ago, at least, like, nobody was as big as they are now. My dad, who's long passed away now, he was born in 1921. And he used to say, I never saw people who were overweight. You just didn't really see it. Well, what changed? I mean, people were more active. They had more they had the jobs where you had to be on your feet and do things more. And people walked more and they didn't eat huge portions and junk food and fast food all the time. And very, very highly palatable, calorie dense food. So, I mean, a lot of things have changed in terms of our environment and whatnot. But anyways, to kind of circle back to what you asked, I can't stand it. Like, let's take ownership for our actions. Because here's another thing I've said before. If we say the food we put in our mouth, the choice to put the food in our mouth, if that's outside of our control, what is within our control? What is? Like, if we can't say you are responsible, blameworthy, or praiseworthy for the choices of food you put in your own mouth, then is there any real thing? Is there any such thing as justice or rewards and punishments for behaviors? Because similarly, like, people decide to take actions that are illegal and immoral, and we want to say that person belongs behind bars or whatever else because of them. Well, right. So, like, where do you draw the line? If we can't take responsibility for our lifestyle behaviors in terms of the choice to eat X over Y, right? Or the choice to get up and take a walk versus sit on your butt. Well, then we can't take responsibility for those things. What can we truly take responsibility for, if anything at all?
I totally agree. And, mental health is a big thing right now. And I'm not discounting anything about mental health, but don't you feel that before we can, these people that need help, that whether they're bipolar, they're schizo or whatever condition they've been or diagnosis they've been given, you look at a lot of those people and they aren't in good physical help. I think, couldn't we handle a lot of mental health better by at least starting with the body and getting that thing working? So then the brain's going to work a little better, and then we can kind of decide how to fix that last bit of the brain.
Yeah, absolutely. Because kind of going back to the thing we're talking about earlier, so many people who get fit also report to me, Ted, I'm in a way better mood. I treat people better. I'm less irritable. I'm happier. And nothing changed about their environment, right? Like, they still got the bad shift work and the crummy assignment they're in or the boss they don't like to deal with, but they're happier. You know, their symptoms of depression, anxiety, PTSD are significantly reduced. I can't even tell you how many people have gotten off depression medication after working with me and they get fitter and healthier. I didn't do any therapy sessions with them necessarily, but they got fit and healthy. They lost a ton of fat. Their body is working better. Their hormones are more balanced. They're eating better foods, right? I mean, that's a huge, huge topic in and of itself, right? How we've forgotten that food is fuel. It can absolutely change you. You think about how they have pills that are damn near microscopic that could kill you. So is it far-fetched to think the large quantities of food you eat every day could have a massive impact on your brain, on your body, on how it operates? You know what I'm saying? So we've obviously adopted this mindset, unfortunately, generally as a society, that it takes a pill, a prescription to fix the issue. I would venture to say, not that I'm a doctor in any way, but you guys could speak to this as doctors. You know, most issues, I would say, probably can be solved without medications in those fields, yes. In those regards, right? Medication really ought to be the last resort after you've tried to change your lifestyle and really put in a good attempt, multiple attempts to fix your lifestyle first, right?
Great. Great point. We feel pretty strongly about that. Hey, Ted, let's go back a little bit. And, you know, we understand that, and the research is out there that 40% of police officers, firefighters, and security officers are obese, are considered clinically obese. And then some crazy statistic about FBI agents and found that like 8 out of 10 of them are overweight. So can you give me from a law enforcement and a fitness perspective, what is that moment or what are those sequence of things that happen that, and you said it was like a slow process, almost like a cancer, you know, that makes them out of shape. They choose to become out of shape. Where does it start?
Yeah, it's tough because there's many factors. I think as human beings, we'd love to find the one issue that causes the problem because it simplifies it. And then it also makes a potential solution easier, right? Almost like when you look at someone who misbehaves, you go, or a child that's misbehaving, let's look at the parents, must be the parents. Could be a lot of issues though, right? Could be more than one factor. And with first responders, I think there's a ton of conflating factors. You look at the job itself, it's very stressful. So it makes people turn to ways to cope and to deal with the stress. And unfortunately, food is a huge way people deal with stress. They comfort eat. They talk about, I'm a stress eater. I'm an emotional eater, right? Those types of things. For a lot of first responder work is mostly sedentary. You're mostly sitting down. But then on top of it, it's like a vicious cycle. People get hurt because they're out of shape too. And then the injuries discourage people from working out. I think it's a culture thing too, especially with firefighters. There's a culture around eating, like let's get together and eat a bunch of stuff. Cops, gosh, every day in the briefing room, there's a ton of cookies and candy and garbage and junk food. People donate it. Even the higher ups, the brass, go, hey, to improve morale. I mean, they don't say that, but to improve morale, here's a bunch of boxes of pizza we can dig into. And then they have traditions of going out to eat, going out to lunch, and going out to breakfast together as a crew. So there's all those factors. And for me, like you mentioned me personally, I was overweight at one point. I was about easily 40 pounds of fat overweight. How did that happen? I feel like my clients where I go, how did I get here? Right. I mean, you know, I think it was a lot of the food they served in the staff hall was garbage and I just ate a lot of it and it was a sedentary job. I also was a lot like the guys I was just making fun of going, well, at least I'm still strong because I still like lifted weights and I still cared about, you know, being like the power lifter guy. But yeah, it wasn't until my doctor was like, yeah, you got high blood pressure at 24 years old. Here's your pills. And I was like, wait, no, I need to fix this. Yeah. So, the job itself is tough. You know, these people were juggling family life, kids, long shifts, odd hours. You work night shifts. There's, you know, a lot of data on how that can negatively impact our fitness, and right? And I, you know, these people are tired and stressed out. They turn to food. They're sedentary. They feel as if they can't do the things that they need to do to get fit. They're discouraged. A lot of them are unmotivated. The sad part is, with so much media scrutiny nowadays, you see for cops especially, a lot of people don't feel that fire they once had for their job, and they're just going through the motions. So there's even less incentive to be the best version of themselves, right? So yeah, there's a lot of factors.
You know, I got to let the audience know that you're talking from experience. You're not just some fitness guy or some personal trainer, some bodybuilder. Let's lay it out. You abusive family. You were a cop, which is a lot of people say that's extremely high stress. But you also had a TBI, and you say that changed your life. So you've had a head injury too. So you don't people that are listening to this podcast can go, well, he doesn't always talk, but he's never did this. He never had this. He never had that. No, you've had all this stuff, and you're still fighting back, and now you're fighting for others. How did this TBI change you, and can you talk from experience?
TBI, for those listeners, is traumatic brain injury.
So if I don't make sense or I sound stupid, it's because of the TBI, guys. Give me a break, okay? I've had so many injuries. I'm a klutz. I really am. Like, it's just when I get hurt, people are like, oh, there's Ted again getting hurt, because I just get hurt in dumb ways. And I've come back from some pretty significant injuries. That helps me speak from experience when I say, hey, if you're injured, you can still be fit. You can still do a lot of things to be fit and healthy. But my buddy and I were wrestling at the age of 18, just kind of roughhousing in a living room. And I hit my head on a piece of furniture and significant pain the next day in my head. I went to the hospital and they said, you have a blood clot underneath the surface of your brain, and this could explode at any moment. Like, the blood vessel is ready to burst. We need emergency surgery now. So I went into that, and yeah, recovering from that, I was kind of like out of it for a couple of weeks, like laying on my side on a couch, like not doing anything. So I developed some atrophy in my shoulder. So the physical therapist said, here's how you strengthen it. Here's the exercises you need to do. And that's kind of when the bug bit me, as I went, wow, like, look at my shoulder went from, I can barely lift my arm, to now I'm pressing dumbbells. And I went, how strong can I get? And this was also around the time where, you know, I'm becoming an adult, I'm becoming a man, and going, I don't have to be a victim of my circumstances, my mom, or any of the hard things I've been through. So I'm going to build myself up. But yeah, as far as speaking from experience to what you said there, you know, I have four kids. My wife was a cop. We both worked full time. We often would pass the baby back and forth when we're just exchanging on 12-hour shifts. You know, I've gone through many injuries. I am genetically disposed to high blood pressure, but I beat that too. You know, I mean, arguably obesity too, because my mom's side of the family, they're pretty heavy. But, you know, like, I can speak from that experience. And I can also speak to the fact that if you're going to sit there and tell me, well, I can't do whatever because of whatever, well, that because of whatever, I've seen so many clients overcome whatever challenge you could even mention. That's been the beautiful part of working with so many people over the years as a fitness coach and being in law enforcement for 11 years, is that I've seen every challenge and struggle beaten by people. You have seven kids? Cool. I know a cop with seven kids who is married to another cop who stays in great shape. You have a back injury that makes it hard to walk. I'll show you someone who lost 90 pounds regardless, right? Like, whatever your challenge is, someone's done it. Someone could probably even one up you. So be inspired by that, I guess.
So Ted, we're entering the phase, one of our favorite phases of the podcast, and it's the rapid fire questions. So you seem pretty glib and know what to say. And I'm going to fire off five questions to you and give me a brief, or if you can, I always say brief answer, but we get hung up on the cool answers people give. So we're going to try to make this rapid fire. Are you ready?
I'm ready. I'll try to keep it brief. As you can see, I tend to ramble, but I'll do my best.
No, we like it. It's value in what you're saying.
Thanks.
Okay. Question number one, you have four kids, a wife, you run a business and you're extremely fit. What's your secret for finding the time and balance?
Prioritization. So put the things that are hard that you need to do first. So I'll generally get my workout in immediately. I'll wake up early. I create my own schedule and I still wake up at 4:30 most mornings. If it's a day off, you know, we try to get the meal prep done and we get that done, right away. So I think it's, the way to be successful is having a good plan of action, following a routine that works for you, and prioritization, doing the things that are hard but that you need to do first.
Great answer. Quick prioritize. Question number two, best five routines that help you stay fit.
Exercise routines?
You could do that.
Oh, that's good. So five. Well, let's talk about some principles. I'll say that what you ought to do, especially if you're a busy person, you're a first responder, is think about efficiency. So in training, I think about shortening rest periods. I don't tend to lift very heavy. I do like sort of rep ranges of 12 plus, because first of all, that's mitigating injury potential to a degree, but then with the faster pace lifting and shorter rest periods, I tend to kill two birds with one stone and burn more calories and improve my cardio and endurance. So I'll say that for the same reason, I guess point number two is I like some circuit training too. So like hit one muscle, superset, hit another muscle. As opposed to you tend to see these cookie cutter bodybuilding routines where you just hit chest for 2 hours straight and then you hit legs for 2 hours straight, right? I'll also say, and this probably would be a good wrap up point, but I'll just make it point number three, is that do the things you like to do. If you hate a particular type of exercise, I think first it would be good to zoom out and maybe talk with a coach if you have one about why you hate it. If it's because it's tough necessarily, then maybe it's just something you need to work on and overcome. But, you know, what's the best form of cardio? Well, the one you'll do, the one that doesn't cause as much pain with any existing injuries, the one that you're more comfortable doing and pushing yourself on, right? So like, there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, I like these types of exercises or these types of routines. So, you know, emphasize those. So let's see, there's three things. You know, I'll say the fourth thing is that it is very much dependent on goals, right? So I think a lot of people have asked me, and maybe this is sort of part of your question, what's the best way to train? And it really depends so much on the person's goals, and their abilities and limitations. So as a coach, I tend to really kind of customize the training based on the person's goals. Some people may do better with heavier lifting, more compound movements. Some people may do better with circuit training. Some people may do better with body weight exercises. So the specifics on sets and reps and workout equipment, it can definitely depend. Okay, so that's four things. Here's the fifth thing. I would say have accountability. Okay. As far as like, what's the best workout routine, Ted, or what's the best way to exercise? You ought to have some form of accountability. I've benefited myself from having many coaches. I've had one recently as a few months ago. I'm sure I'll have coaches more in the future as I work to improve myself on some goals that are difficult or challenging for me. Having direction, a plan of action that's outside of your own head, especially when you're paying for, it creates skin in the game and it'll make you do better. So think about that. Like if you're sitting there going, I've tried everything, Ted, have you tried a really good coach, a good mentor, somebody who's working with you one-on-one? If not, you really haven't tried everything. So anyways, hopefully that was good. Wrapping it up with that.
No, that was actually fantastic. And there's some real key points in that. So thanks for answering that so clearly. Cool. All right. Question number. Oh, my God, Terry. Question number three. I got caught up in his one through five there. I loved it. Right. All right. Question number three. Best mustache maintenance routine.
Whatever one helps you avoid upsetting your wife in terms of stinky mustache, sticky mustache. I don't know. I don't even have one. Honestly, I wash my face with the same soap and I don't even trim my mustache. I don't know why it stays this length. It just kind of just stays this length. So I don't really care for it. It just is this dirty dog that just kind of just hangs out and food gets in there.
Mustache, man.
Coffee gets in there. So yeah, these guys are like combing their mustache with seven different types of oils and then they use this special wax. I don't know. I don't have time for that. I don't do anything for it.
You're gifted with a good mustache. Maybe. All right. So now, question number four. If someone was to ask you, how should I approach fat loss? Or can you give me a diet? What would your response be?
We need to have a longer conversation because alluding to what I was saying earlier, like it is very personal. I think a good approach is very personalized. And that's why people are constantly looking for what's the one diet. Maybe it's keto. Maybe it's paleo. Maybe it's weight. I got to do Weight Watchers. Different approaches work for different folks. And I'll tell you, like people I've worked with, some of them eat two meals a day. Some of them eat six. Some love to cook. Some eat out mostly. You can lose fat doing all those things. You have to have the right approach for all those things. So, yeah. You know, I know people probably want me to say, hey, so here's what you do. You skip breakfast and you put butter in your coffee. And then you do. No, like, let's be honest. There's many ways to skin a cat. But what my goal is working with people, and this is one of our biggest goals in the Fit Responder program, is not only how can we help you lose the fat and feel your best and improve your muscles and strength and performance, but how can we help you maintain it? How can we help you develop a lifestyle that works for you that you can stay consistent with? So I'm happy to give you some general principles on dieting or making sure your nutrition or your training is more optimized. But a lot of it has to do with you, your goals, your abilities, your limitations, your preferences, and designing a good process around that.
Great. I have this isn't one of my rapid fire questions, but it is a question that Dr. Terry and I probably get asked often, and that is, how do you know if someone's wasting your time? Because they always come up and go, hey, can you give me a diet, man? It looks as good as you. And I remember in the early years, we would sit down and write out this diet for them and they wouldn't follow. What? How do you know if someone's wasting your time?
That's a good question. So we get plenty in terms of tire kickers or window shoppers. Let me hear more about your program. And then they disappear, whatever. But, you know, I'm not cheap. The Fit Responder program is not cheap. And, you know, that helps separate people who are serious or not. It also helps hold them accountable. And for me to provide, in my opinion, the best program that you can find as far as remote coaching, like it's not going to be $50 a month. And you know, typically if people are willing to pay, they're willing to be serious. And when I was like younger and writing people free training plans and free nutrition plans or whatever, and then I check up with them later, how you doing? Oh, yeah. I'm going to start that soon. I got been some stuff going on, blah, blah. So let's be real. Skin in the game matters. And put your money where your mouth is. Let's go.
That's right. Last question of the rapid fire questions. Besides winning the class clown award in high school, what has been your greatest achievement?
How did you know that?
We have our ways.
Jeez, what else do you know? Yeah, I'm a class clown for sure. What was your actual question though? What else have I?
Man, I really got his brain shut really off on that one. All right. What has been your personal greatest achievement?
We know class clown was number one. So what did you? Yeah. What have you done since to beat that?
Yeah. Oh man, you know, it's. I think a lot of people seeing my character now, like how I tend to be and act, would be surprised to learn that as a young man, I was very weak, I hated working out and I was a total goof off and a jokester. So yeah, what's fun. Let me tell you a quick story. I ran into a coach, this guy who coached a lot of different sports in my high school, and he knew me and he knew I was a goof off and lazy and weak and all this stuff. And he ran into me as a big buff, kind of serious cop with this, right? And we talked for a bit and he started laughing. He's like, anything's possible. I would have never thought you'd be in this spot in your life. And I'm like, oh, I guess that's a compliment. I don't know. Major achievement. I think I'm very proud of my family, like creating having a family where I got four beautiful kids. I have an amazing wife, and one of my goals in terms of growing up was that I wanted that. Like, well, I didn't come from the best family dynamic or experience, and I want to create one for my kids, and I want to create my own environment, create my own family that I love and care about, that cares about me. So I guess that's my biggest achievement.
That's beautiful. For all you class clowns out there, there's hope. You know, you can marry a beautiful woman and have four amazing kids and have a great job and a good mustache. Yeah. So I actually want to go on to your business, because we talk to a lot of trainers, both on our podcast as well as in our jobs. But what caught my eye on you is your training facility is built around first responders. And and you create this niche that makes your workouts different, and this whole niche that people seek you out. Where did that? Can you talk about as a businessman how you create?
Yeah, so my wife and I have been trainers and coaches since we were 18 years old, respectively. And I think from our example, a lot of people just approach us too. Like, we dropped the training stuff and we focused our career as cops. But even our partners would be like, Ted, like, how do you stay in shape, you know, with this job? Like, you know, you're a detective, you're busy as hell, you got four kids, like, how do you do it? And we get questions like that a lot. So we started coaching people kind of as a side gig. As cops, we'd coach a lot of people in our department, and they started getting fitter. And, you know, what's cool about this business is that people go, dang, so-and-so, how'd you get in great shape? Oh, well, work with Ted and Emily. You know, I've been working with Ted and Emily. They've been giving me coaching on nutrition and training and help me out. So it kind of started on accident. It was more like, wow, babe, like, we can do this as a side gig and make some date night money and help people and, you know, have fun doing it, 'cause we enjoy coaching people. And, the popularity spread super fast, like way more than I thought. And the demand got wild. And there was a point where I had like 20 to 30 clients, and so did my wife. And then we were also trying to juggle family and work. And I had to decide, like, you know, I had to make a decision. Do I want to keep this real smart time and stay as a cop? But like, I had to follow my heart, and I love doing this. I'm so excited. I get texts every day from people. Ted, I had to buy a new duty belt. Ted, I dropped the blood pressure medication. Probably weekly, we got into a foot pursuit. I lasted way longer than I ever could have before, and I got the dude, or I saved the person. I know for a fact, not trying to sound like, whatever, but I have saved lives, a lot of them. And many people have saved lives because of the ways I've helped them change their own life. So the impact I'm able to have in this job is, I can't even call it a job. It's absolutely a calling. Like, I'm stoked to do it every day. Probably a couple times a month, I'm moved to tears by just the way people have changed and the things they're doing in their life. I'm so excited to get up every day, even though I make my own schedule. That's why I work out at 4:30 in the morning, is so I can immediately after breakfast get to work and work with my clients and meet new people. And one day I want Fit Responder to be the leading cause behind first responders not being some of the most out of shape and obese people in America, but, you know, people who are fit, healthy, and happy and ready to do their jobs well. So yeah, I did decide, all right, should we do this full time? It was a tough decision because I had just promoted. I loved being a cop. I was very successful in my career. I had great partners and friends I made, but I you have to just follow your heart. And it was one of those things where I just felt compelled to do it. So now it's our full-time gig.
Yeah, that's something big, because it's so needed universally. And actually, Ted, while you're talking, I'm thinking, I'm like, you know, you probably should offer this kind of concept or service at through other precincts in the country somehow, because I mean, I was approached by, you know, law enforcement, you know, whether FBI or, you know, local precincts, but I mean, really, I see this thing and your attitude and your, you know, it's in your veins, man. And that's something that really could be a great example and opportunity for other departments around the country. I mean, somehow you need to take.
No, you're right. And that's one of my goals, hopefully within the next couple of years, is that we can present and have programs for departments to help their personnel get fit. So making it sort of, it's going to have to be a more templated process. It's going to have to be more of a grander scale thing. Cause right now it's very one-on-one. There's no doubt that the best results tend to happen from very close work with people. Let's just face it. But I do want to do that. Like I want to make a massive impact. And there is a huge need for it. Like if there's any professions that need a very dialed in fitness, health, and wellness approach, it's for first responders. They don't have they don't have good support. Generally, they don't have good support in that regard. They're left to their own devices. So you're absolutely right. I want to do that, but I've also learned in business that you ought to do the thing you do well and really nail that and like make it like gold diamond standard, then move on to other things. Like Starbucks made sure their coffee was great before they got into Danishes and egg wraps and stuff, if that makes sense. So yeah, I want to do our
thing. Did they? Did they?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm just saying. Maybe that's a bad example, but you get what I mean. Like I want to dial in. Like, and we're very dialed. I mean, I probably could make this move to be a bigger, to do department stuff, but yeah, just focusing on what we do best for now.
Yeah, I actually imagine while you're saying that and hearing your passion behind it and what it would be like if you actually offered like classes or entrepreneurial programs for those that can be you in other states and with other organizations. I mean, you know, offer programs. I mean, in our profession, you know, they have, you know, guys who specialize with soft tissue work or adjusting, and then they have educational programs that they get certified. They could be Fit Responder certified. Man, you are really much more needed in America than most people than most people realize. I mean, it would be a huge opportunity for you to affect thousands. So I'm excited for you.
Thanks.
And yeah, really, really great stuff, man. You're very well needed. You're a hot commodity here. So let me ask you, because we're going to look to wrap this up, and if there's something that you want to share with the listeners, you know, some motivational or a little tip or anything like that, is there anything that you would like to end this podcast with?
For sure. So if you grow a mustache, everyone will point it out and ask you about it and make jokes, just warning you. No, I'm okay. The actual thing I guess I'll say is that whatever position you're sitting in now, you can be better. You can improve. Don't buy into the victim mindset. There are absolutely real challenges. But if you need help, get help. I think a huge barrier that a lot of first responders have is they're so used to being the person who takes care of people's problems. They're not ones to go, hey, I need help myself. Like I need a coach. I need support. I need some direction. But remember, the best athletes in the world all have coaches. They rely on support to the max. They have their own doctors, their own chiropractors, their own PTs, their own everything. Even though they know a lot about what they're doing, okay? They're not lacking in motivation or knowledge, but they still benefit from having great support. So I'll say, as far as inspiration goes, you are absolutely capable of becoming more. You can become the person you want to become. It may take time. It may take some effort. It may take some trials and tribulations, but get support. Don't give up. If you want to consider looking at us, you can go to fitresponder.com. Check out our page. We're on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. You can find me, Ted Stern. And potentially we could be a solution for you, but don't give up and remember your why. It's very important and you'll never regret it.
Ted, that was great, man. I'm telling you, you are an inspiration. I am happy that we had you on. And for those of you who are, you have to be compelled to look at this website, look at his Facebook page, look at some of the before and after images. They will absolutely inspire you, and everybody needs a coach. You're absolutely right, Ted.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Crackin' Backs podcast. We hope you enjoyed, and make sure you follow our Instagram at Crackin' Backs podcast. Catch new episodes every Monday. See you next time.